listening to New England Public Radio News, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today, Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Springfield Republican newspaper, and Chris Collins, columnist with the Greenfield Recorder. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Recently, there's been rumblings that casino operator MGM is negotiating with Wynn Resorts to purchase a casino currently under construction in the Boston suburb of Everett. There's questions about the status of the Eastern Mass project after Steve Wynn left his company amid sexual assault allegations. MGM, of course, is building a casino in Springfield that's scheduled to open in September, and state law says that a casino company can only have one license in Massachusetts. So, Ron, do officials in Springfield have cause for concern that MGM might end up selling off the Springfield project in exchange for Boston?
I do think they have cause for concern because there's legitimacy to this story, and it just shows us that you really can't count on any marriage to last forever. MGM and Springfield have this warm embrace, but if there's a more profitable operation down the road, I can certainly see them doing that for the sake of their business, and that leaves Springfield wondering who's going to operate this downtown casino that they have based their future and their economic development on.
I mean, it all comes down to bucks, and it's hard not to look at this as a bait and switch. I mean, MGM came in here in good faith. You know, half the city or somewhat is involved in this in terms of real estate, and now they're going to go to Boston because the grass is greener. And who does that leave us with? Mohegan, Foxwoods. I mean, it's an absolute bait and switch. And if I'm a Springfield official, I'm pretty mad right now.
What should the Gaming Commission be doing, Chris, about all of this?
Well, I think, first of all, they got to take a look at this rule about one company owning one casino in the state. I mean, I think that, not that I want MGM to own both, but I think that that is pretty restrictive. And it leaves open for a situation just like this, where a city, Springfield, negotiates in good faith, and then this casino owner decides, well, it's better fit in Boston, and then we're left holding the bag. It's not a good thing.
Ron, should casino operators be able to hold more than one license in Massachusetts?
Well, Chris brings up a very good point, but I'm not sure I want the law changed just because of this. I think there's reasons to have this law into effect, and I think it's actually a good law. I also don't assume that there's a long line of people who are going to want to buy this thing if MGM pulls out. The assumption is somebody will pick it up. That's only an assumption. But as for the law, I think there's reasons it exists, and I wouldn't want to see it stripped down just for this.
And by the way, if someone comes in with half a loaf and decides to buy this thing and buys it at a discount, it could be a disaster for the city, a real disaster.
This week, yet another scandal with the Massachusetts State Police came to light. This time, its suspended payroll director allegedly stole $23,000 from the department over a 15-month span. Allegedly, Denise Ezekiel put in for fraudulent reimbursements for things like travel and training. This comes after a scandal involving troopers putting in for overtime hours they didn't work, and another involving an arrest report of a judge's daughter. Chris, Governor Baker said this week that, quote, stuff that goes on my watch belongs to me. When asked about the state police situation, there's been some reforms announced lately for the department, but is there more that Charlie Baker should be doing?
Well, it's easy to fall on a sword when you have a 70% approval rating, but be that as it may, he also said that he thought this was good news, that they found this out. This is good news. I mean, it's good news maybe that the state police is policing themselves a little more, but this is not good news for Charlie Baker, especially going into an election year, and it gives his opponents on the Democratic side an open shot. And Bob Massey's already taken that shot this week, saying basically exactly what Baker said. This happened on his watch, and it's his responsibility.
Ron, can the state police be an effective law enforcement agency with all of these issues that have come up?
That is becoming an increasingly good question because they are continually taking hits that make this worse and worse and worse. And I actually have some sympathy for Colonel Gilpin, who's trying to supposedly put this back together. Every time it looks like they're ready to move forward, they have to take three steps back because of a new crisis. I don't know when the state police's image will be restored, if at all.
This week, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court opened the door to stun guns becoming legal. In a ruling, it struck down the state's current law, which bans the possession of the electronic weapons by the public, saying the law violated the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. This is an about-face for the SJC, which a few years ago upheld the state law, but ended up seeing that decision in the case overturned by the Supreme Court of the United States. Of course, that was a different case. Brian Kies is the head of the Massachusetts Major City Police Chiefs Association, and he says that the current laws for firearms should also be used for stun guns.
If we can just allow people to carry these weapons if they so choose, as long as they're licensed, as long as they're not otherwise prohibited, I think that should be the bar that should be set.
Ron, is that the right way to go about regulating these weapons?
Well, I don't see stun guns as a necessary component of the average everyday life. But I will say this. I look at this differently, this ruling. The SJC has told the legislature, come back with something basically we can live with. We can't live with this. Come back with better legislation. So I don't think the SJC is trying to allow stun guns to become popular and legal. They're telling the legislature you have to be more specific with your laws.
And it's something that the legislature had been working on in anticipation, I think, of this particular decision. Chris, do you think this is a public safety threat in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I think it's an absolute public safety threat because if you have a cardiac condition, you get hit with one of these things, you're pretty much dead. And so it's as deadly a weapon, I think, as depending on who gets hit with it, as any other weapon there is. And you know, I have a hard time believing the framers were sitting back thinking, you know, we might have tasers down the road. Like, you give me your tired, your poor, your tasers. It doesn't work that way. I think that the legislature will do their best to put a bill together before the end of the session, but the key words there are do their best. They may come back with a bill that's wholly inadequate, and you could see these things on the street as early as the fall, probably.
Ron, I'll ask you this first. Are there any conditions where you would carry a stun gun?
I wouldn't carry a gun at all. So I'm the wrong person for any, and I know you're not a gun lobbyist, but I'm the wrong person to ask. I don't see the point. I understand why some people do, but you're asking me? I would never do that. And I agree. The Founding Fathers didn't have any of this stuff in mind when they sat down and made the Second Amendment. That's the most misunderstood amendment on purpose that I've ever seen.
Chris, would you carry one?
Only if I were going to a meet and greet with Bruins announcer Jack Edwards.
Jeez. And speaking of the local Boston sports teams, they're all doing pretty well in April. The Red Sox are off to a 16-2 start, their best ever start. The Bruins and Celtics are moving along quite nicely in their first round playoff series. And Chris, you just kind of tipped your hand. What have you thought about the Bruins so far?
Love it. Love the story. Love the team. I think that they're young. They're inspired. I think the management's done a good job in bringing. I think a lot of people thought this team was too young to compete now. I think they're very much ready to compete now. I think it gets tougher as the rounds go on. But I'm a Bruins guy, you know, dyed in the wool. I love it. And this for me is my March Madness. This time of the year, I just can't not watch hockey.
And Ron, you were on the Red Sox beat for many years. Is this hot start something that could be a good sign of things to come for this team?
I'm still getting past his antipathy for Jack Edwards. But I will say this, as much as the Red Sox are doing well, the team I really like is the Celtics because they give you 100% every single night. They've had a bunch of injuries and they're still competing. I like all these teams, but I'm especially rooting for the Celtics because I think they're an easy team to root for.
All right, Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Springfield Republican, and Chris Collins with the Greenfield Recorder. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.